All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Anton Babajanov, and I'm part of a fairly new product at Microsoft called API Management. One of my colleagues is also here. I'm not sure he's in the audience just yet, Manoush Srivastava, but you can also find him in the booth if he doesn't come in later. So before I start talking about API Management, I want to learn a little bit more about you. So I wonder, how many of you are IT pros? If you're an IT pro versus a developer, lift your hand. There's a small part, perhaps 15%. And how many of you are developers? Everybody else? Wow, very interesting. So just in retrospect, we demoed this at Tech at Houston as well. And it seems like we had much more IT pros at that conference as compared to here. So it's going to be interesting. So how many of you are managing an API right now? So perhaps 10% or less. Okay. And have you heard of API management before, the concept of it, not just the Azure product? Okay. Even smaller group of people. Okay. So first I'm going to give you a very, very quick overview of the API economy. So APIs have started to power more and more applications and services and in general scenarios around us. So much so that in the past year or two, they sort of stopped becoming something that only developers talk about, but are now something that marketing departments understand and try to sell to third parties. That's because APIs can drive business and can drive transactions. And we can see basically that the growth of APIs has been pretty much a hockey stick. It seems that it's slowing down a little bit, but we're still seeing well into the double-digit growth per year and sort of proof that this is a strong emerging trend. Now, you may wonder, why have an API? Like, what is the reason for all this growth? Well, the first reason really is that an API allows you to take the existing data and services that your organization already possesses and make them into a platform. A platform means that you are getting better discoverability, it's easier to find, and it opens up new channels for business, for transactions, for sales. A key aspect of a platform is also, which is important for API management, that a platform is uniform. So you may have built your data and services over a long period of time, and they may differ in the way that they function. But when you have a platform, they should function like one whole. Also, APIs allow you to understand your business. That's because, by the very nature of them, they don't limit their customers or developers to a specific scenario, but they enable a multitude of scenarios. So they can be used for things that you didn't imagine that they were useful for. So tracking how your APIs are being used and looking crunching that data is very important because A, it can show you where you should focus on your efforts on improving from the scenarios that you already thought were existing, and also you can find new scenarios that you can support further and ultimately deliver more value to everybody in this way. Now, APIs also help you monetize. There are a couple different models, actually, to do this. The important part is that you can do it indirectly. So let's just say that you're an e-commerce company. You could expose all the products that you sell through an API. You may not actually allow sales of those products. This will drive more discoverability towards these products and will still indirectly increase your bottom line. Or you could actually sell the API itself. So perhaps a good example of that is Twilio. They sell a communications API that allows you to do things like send text messages or initiate phone calls, and they sell the API itself. They don't sell a product, like if it was e-commerce, a separate product, but the API itself is the product. And it's important to note that this is valuable also for internal APIs. So for example, an API where one department exposes their services to another department. You may say that there are no sales involved in this case, but it improves the agility with which an organization can implement new scenarios because there is sort of the departments become decoupled, in effect. So this, in turn, also improves the bottom line. Pass through this slide. So what is API management? Well, to run an API program, to run an API, First thing you need is you need a presence on the web. So you need interactive documentation. And really the purpose of that is to get developers started as quickly as possible. And developers obviously want to make a call in as little time as possible. And also the ability for them to get credentials and access an endpoint of this API. So speaking of an endpoint, you need to, as I mentioned before, have a uniform facade on top of all the services that you're exposing. You want to support modern protocols like REST and JSON. And this means that if you have legacy services that were built on something like XML, you need to be able to convert between those two. You'd have a URL structure that basically says, hey, this is one API rather than a concoction of services. And you also want to protect your existing backend systems. Now, you also want to package the APIs in a consumable format. Quite often this means providing different tiers of access. For example, let's just say allowing 10,000 calls per month on one tier or providing unlimited access to another. You can decide what tiers mean. Tiers can also mean providing access to different APIs to different types of customers. And since I mentioned understanding your business, you also need a dashboard, you need an analytics system where it can drill into the behavior that the APIs are driving and understand how your business is working and what people are doing. So with that said, we actually acquired a small startup last year called Epiphany, based in Washington, D.C. And we integrated their product into back then Windows Azure, now Microsoft Azure. We launched in public preview at the last decade in Houston, May 11th, and we launched in general availability earlier this year, or earlier in September. So, Azure API Management, what is it? First, we assume that you bring your backend, and then we try to handle a number of groups. First, for the developers that are going to try to use your API, we provide a developer portal that contains automatically generated documentation, registration, and so forth. I'll demo it in a minute, so I won't go into too much detail. Then for the apps the developers are going to write, we provide a proxy, which then connects into your backend. This proxy can do dynamic transformations, like, for example, it can rewrite URLs, it can convert between XML and JSON, and so forth. Again, I will show you all of this in a second as well. An important note here is that, and we get asked this all the time, your backend doesn't have to be on Azure. Your backend can be running on any kind of platform and on any kind of cloud that you want. As long as it is accessible online, it can be connected to Azure API Management. And of course, for the administrator of the system, we provide the publisher portal. So with that said, let's go on to the demo. Okay, so. All right, so API Management is a service in Azure, and you can provision it by a self-serve fashion. It's very easy. All you have to do is find it under App Services, API Management, and fill out a couple of details. So first, you have to provide a URL for the service. Now, let's just say I call this demo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The URL is used for two things. First, your developer portal will be based on this URL, and second, your public endpoint. Now, of course, we do support custom domains, so you simply get this for free from us if you wanted to use our domains. We're also available in a number of regions. And after I complete this, it takes about 15 minutes, so I'm actually going to use a service that I have already provisioned before in the interest of time. So as you can see here from the administrative interface within the Azure portal, you can only do a number of things. You can, for example, change the scale of the service, how many instances it has. And I'll mention a little bit later exactly what these instances are. And you can configure a custom domain. Most of the configuration work is actually done in a so-called pop-out portal, which you can access from this Manage button. In fact, I'll have it open here. And this is really an artifact from the acquisition because we had a lot of UI that was already built, and we decided to build on top of that. Eventually, we'll integrate all of this UI into the Azure Ibiza portal. So, here I am in the dashboard, and I can see everything is empty. I have no APIs, no products. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to connect to a backend that I have prepared in Azure Mobile Services that provides a list of interesting destinations in Barcelona. And I'm going to route this backend via API management and expose it as a public API. So to do this, I'm going to click Add API and add my first API. I'm going to call it Tour Barcelona. I'm going to enter the URL of the endpoint. And again, it doesn't have to be on Azure. In this case, it is, but this is just for a demo. And now, the suffix is what we use to delineate the different backends that you have set up in your system. So each API that you set up will be available under the root of your tenant, which can also be your custom domain, and then slash the suffix. We are considering allowing a little more flexibility with this, where you can connect multiple APIs to the same suffix so that the suffix doesn't become a limiting factor and you don't have too many of those. Okay. So as I mentioned, we generate documentation automatically. So the information, the metadata that I basically fill in to this interface is what is going to be used to generate this documentation. So I'm going to add in a description here. Okay, going to save that. And now the next step is I have to configure the operations that this API will support. So these are basically the individual method calls that can be called on it. So let's add an operation. Let's say that I'm going to have a get operation. And in fact, what I can do, since this is a mobile service and I have my data in a table, I can query the table directly. There is an API for that. And now in the next field, so what I'm doing here is I'm setting the URL template. This will be used to make a call to it. In the display name and description fields, what I can enter is a friendly name for it. So this will be used for the documentation part. So let me call this displaces. And what I can also set up here is caching, which I'll get to later, and parameters, which I'll also get to later because this particular method call has no parameters. In fact, what I'll do is I'll set up one more method call which accepts parameters. So I have an API that can take a parameter because it can find a place. Oops. And find a place by name. So basically, I can set up every parameter that this particular API method accepts. In this case, it accepts a single parameter called name, which is simply the name of the place you're looking for. I can define what type of data it accepts. Now this is, again, purely for documentation purposes. It's not being validated. And I can also provide sample values that aid the user in the documentation. For example, I'll add the sample value. Okay, so let me save this. Now, before I can show you how this can be accessed from the developer portal, I must expose it in a so-called product. As I mentioned, products are ways to package APIs into consumable units. So I'm going to create a product, and I'm going to call it the tourist product. It's going to have a very similar description for it. When creating a product, I have the option of requiring subscription approval. So if you have a product that provides access to special APIs where you don't want everybody to just be able to subscribe to it, you can enable this option, and then as an administrator, you will get an email every single time somebody tries to subscribe. This way you can vet people individually. Now, I'm not going to do it right now because the purpose of this is to be public. Another interesting aspect of products is the visibility settings. So I can make the product visible to only particular groups. We have three built-in groups, the administrator, which is what I'm logged in right now, the developers, which is basically everybody with an account that has created an account in the developer portal, which I will also show you in a minute, and guests, which is practically every visitor. You can create groups manually. And if you do so, you also have to assign users to them manually. But then you can also make a product visible to individual groups. A scenario here would be, for example, having, let's say, the HR department have access to some APIs, while the marketing department doesn't have access to those APIs. You can create a group for the HR department. You can manually add the users which belong to it in that group, and then make the products visible only to that group. So in all this time, the marketing department will never even see the product and the APIs related to that, because the APIs won't show up if they're not part of a product. So in this case, I'm simply going to make this visible to developers. And let's wait for it. Wi-Fi can be a little slow sometimes. And before I'm ready to see this in the developer portal and take a look at it, I have to make the product public. Because, oh, one important part, of course, I have to make a mapping between the product and the APIs that it provides access to. So I'm going to add the API that I just created and publish this. So I can open up the developer portal from this handy link up here. This will put me into the developer portal, and I will be logged in as the current user. Now, I'm not going to show you the registration process. It is pretty straightforward. You can register with a username and password. But I will mention that we support social login. So you can enable single sign-on to the developer portal with Facebook, Google, and Twitter, and I think one more. But I'm just going to go through this. So the developer portal provides you a full content management system. You can edit pages. You can edit pages, and it also is possible to customize it. So the look and feel of it doesn't have to be the current look. This, of course, looks very, very Azure-like. You can make it match the brand that you have. The interesting part, however, is the API section. The content of that section is automatically generated. And it is basically using the metadata that we just entered to provide documentation. So let's open up this API. So we can see the methods that the API contains. We can see the description of the API and the individual methods, and then all the necessary information to make a call. The endpoint URL, and this is, of course, the now Azure endpoint URL, and the parameters and their descriptions. The system also generates code samples in a number of languages that allow a developer to get started quickly without having to fumble around. And it is possible to make a call straight from here. Now, if I try to make a call right now, let's try this API because it has no parameters, I actually shouldn't be able to access it. Let's wait for it. Yes, so I am getting a 401 unauthorized. And that's because mobile services has an authentication mechanism. It requires a special header to be sent. So how do I do that? Well, we have a concept of policies. So policies are basically processing steps that can be applied to the request or the response part of the API pipeline. And they can do modifications. Policies are also scoped in a number of different ways. I can set a policy by product, by an individual API, which is what I need to do right now because I need to provide authentication for this API, or by an individual operation. So let's set a policy on the Tour Barcelona API. Now at present, policies are set in XML. You can see here the request and the response part. We are considering making a graphical user interface for this to make it easier to set it up. So as I mentioned, I wanted to set a special header. So let me go here. And you can see I have templates for all the policies that are available in the system. I will show some more of them in a little bit. But now I'm going to set the header. So in this case, I need to set a header called Exzumo application. And basically, the way it works is that when you get a template, you just have to replace the parameters with the desired ones. So I can say I'm going to always set this header regardless of what exists there. And now I have to set a value. Of course, that's a key, which I have here. As you set up a policy, it may take a couple of seconds for it to propagate, but I can give it a try and see if I get to a success here. Okay, so now I got a 200 OK, and I got some data out of my API. So these are some interesting locations that have been put up in this mobile API, and I'm getting them via Azure API Management. So as a developer, that's a pretty quick way to get started. Now, one thing I do notice, though, is that it has pretty bad latency, almost a second. Perhaps it's going to get a little bit faster if I try again. But it seems that this data, yeah, it's a little bit faster, that this data is fairly static, and it's a good candidate for caching. So let's go back to the API and enable caching. Now, it's really easy, as you saw. All I have to do is find the operation for which I want to enable caching. And I must mention, caching is actually a policy. It's actually two policies, the policy to store to cache and read from cache. And that's why it's very easy to just enable it from here, because this does it for you automatically. I can, however, lower the time to live, because 1 hour is a long period of time. We may want to change this data. So as I enable it from here, once it's saved, I should be able to go and make a call. And let's wait for it. Not sure if I'm having connectivity issues. Maybe I have to try again. Okay. Seems like Wi-Fi isn't working. Let's try again. Okay. I guess it didn't like what I just did, but let me try it again. Seems like it got sent. Okay, good. So it did actually save it. I just didn't get the response because of a network error. So going back to the API, if I make calls now, the first time it should store to cache, and after that, you can see. So it went to double-digit milliseconds. So we have instant cache available in this way. Now, another thing I can do to improve here is looking at this particular API. If I open it up in the portal, I can see that it has a little bit unwieldy string. So I have to provide, in fact, let me enter a value. It has a little bit of an unwieldy, not very restful query string. So how would I go about if I wanted to make that more restful and more modern looking? Well, I can rewrite the URL. So I can go back to the operations editor. And here I have this find place by name. In fact, I just opened it. And to rewrite it, what I do is I take the existing URL and I copy it to the rewrite URL template. And here I can write the URL I want. So I want to actually have a name as basically path parameter. Now, of course, you have to pass it incorrectly here, so I can do this. So what I'm doing is that I'm setting the template I want to be available on the public, and I'm setting the mapping to the actual backend URL. As I do this, I can go back to the request parameters and get rid of the query parameter. So I'm no longer going to use that. And I can save this. So going back to the developer portal, I'll refresh to get the new data. Again, I have the same parameter. One thing I must mention, you saw the description disappeared. So we did extract this parameter when we entered it as a path parameter, but because it's a different type, the description didn't carry over. So I'm not going to enter it, that's fine. So let's give it a try. Okay, it works. So we basically saw how we can add an operation, how we can configure an API in a couple of steps. But the process does take a long time. And if you have a lot of APIs in your organization, this may become unwieldy very quickly. So it's also possible to configure an API by importing its definition. And we support two formats for that. We support Watto and Swagger. So I'm going to import some more APIs now with Watto. So I'm going to call this Explorer. So, of course, in a product where you can see interesting locations in Barcelona, we must have somebody who enters them. And we're going to call these people explorers in this case. And this is the API for them. So here it is. Here is the Explore Barcelona API. If I look at the different tabs, I can see that the description was also imported for it. Again, it uses the same backend. And individual operations with their definition were also put in. One thing that didn't come in that we have to add manually is the header that is being sent for authentication. So I'm going to do this right now. I'm simply going to copy this one from here. Now I can set the header on a global and the policy on a global level. However, I'm going to import one more API that is not going to benefit from this. So in this case, I'm going to set it on a per API basis. And again, before I can access this, I have to create a product and add it to it. So let's create the Explorer product. So as we can see, with import and with some routine, the process becomes a whole lot faster than the first time we did it. Okay, so let's try to make a call to this. Again, we can see now that it just appeared in the developer portal. We can get the locations, and if we try to store a new place, and as you can see, also all the parameter descriptions are put in. So it's a pretty detailed definition of the API. So I'm just going to enter something random, simply because I saw it on the way here. I'm going to enter a URL. Interesting. All right. Well, it looks like the backend isn't responding properly, but it really doesn't matter for the purpose of this demo. All right. So I want to show you something else. The Azure Mobile Services backend actually has a very simple authentication mechanism. It simply asks for a header. But what if you wanted to allow your users to access data that they own behind the backend? So the typical mechanism for that is auth. And we do support OAuth 2.0. You can basically configure an authorization server through which your users can access their data. So, and this is really not the developers, but this is the basically the third level of users. So let me show you quickly how I can configure an authorization server and how the developer portal reflects accessing an API in this way. So I'm going to go to the security tab and switch to OAuth 2.0. And now I'm going to define the individual information pieces for the server. Now it's a lot of information. I have all of it here, so I'm going to copy that. What I'm going to configure is an API that allows you to store data into OneNote. So OneNote, again, is a per-user system. And if I wanted to call OneNote, I'm not just going to call general OneNote API, but I wanted to access my particular notebooks. So authorization for that is going to happen through auth. Now, the client registration URL, so these fields are pretty much self-explanatory. The client registration page URL is the page where users create accounts on that authorization system. It's actually not required, and we're planning to remove the required flag for it. And in this particular case, let's copy the... Okay. Now, when we configure authorization servers, as you know, there's a handshake process going on. And we need to actually set the redirect URL on the authorization server. So to do that, actually, I have to go back in again and get it from here. It's a piece of UI that we're going to improve. And I have to go into my authorization server configuration and paste in the correct redirect URL. So in this case, I'm using the OneNode API to be able to access it. And this is the configuration of that. Basically, it's the LifeID API. Okay, so now I can go back to APIs. I can import one more API, which will be the OneNode API. I will add it to the Torus product. And now I can see it in the developer portal. Now, if I just wanted to call this API this way, I wouldn't be able to call it simply because I don't have the authorization token. So I have to add this as well. So I go back to the OneNode API. And under security, I say that it requires OAuth 2.0. I'm actually able to override the scopes here. I did copy the correct scopes I need for this particular demo in the OAuth server configuration. But if I wanted to reuse the same OAuth server for different APIs and use different scopes, I'm able to do this as well. So as I do this, I will get some new UI here within the developer portal. I will be able to provide authentication. And if I click this and pick the one authorization grant type that we said that we support, I will go through the process of enabling the Discover Barcelona application. You can see here, access to my OneNote data. So basically, if your organization stores user data that you would like to be accessible to the users of the applications developed by the developers, you would have to configure an OAuth server as in between. Now, I think I'm still waiting for this. It's been taking a long time, and I think that may be part of the fact that I'm using the better version of the OneNote API. As I did this demo yesterday, I had to wait for it for almost a minute. What will happen is that the authorization code will be provided as a header that will be sent with each request. And it will appear here once it's ready. Try again. See this? Oh, there it is. As I said, it just takes a long time. So now I should be able to make a call and I shouldn't get an unauthorized error anymore. All right, here it is. And this is data coming from OneNote. So let's actually see if it really works. Let's just create a new page. Now, to create a new page, I have to provide the request body of the page. And the way this works actually is that it just stores the pages in the Quick Notes section. So if you wonder how does it just store it into OneNote, it uses the Quick Notes section by default. Now I do need a sample format here. In fact, I think I have the sample. I had it here, yes. So the description of this imported API, I have the sample format. Interesting. So it doesn't like the fact that I'm sending the subscription key to it. We can actually use a policy to remove this. So we simply forward the subscription key. This is the key that every developer gets when they register for an account, and that identifies them to Azure API Management. And the key is per product. So when I registered, for example, in this case, I'm using the Taurus product. I get a key from it. So I can use a policy. I can set it on the OneNote API to remove this key. And this policy allows me to delete the key if it is already provided. In this case, I don't need the value. So let's see, it may take a while for it to propagate. Okay, now I'm getting a successful response from the system. So let's see, did we actually create a page? OneNote, the OneNote API actually provides you with the URL of the web interface for the page you just created. So I can try to just open that. And there it is. There is the page we just created. Now, since we went back to policies, there is another interesting policy that I mentioned a couple of times that I can show you, which is the policy to convert XML to JSON and vice versa. And mind you, just as an overview, here are all the policies that we currently support. One interesting question that I'll have to you later on as we finish the session is, what other policies would you like to see? We're very interested to understand what people actually need and what we should implement next. So let's just say that all the APIs currently return JSON, which is great, but if I wanted to enable legacy applications, I may want to add XML on top of that. So let's just say that I'm going to take the Tor Barcelona API, the first one that we edited, and I wanted to enable XML output for it as well. So what I'm going to do is, on the response part, I'm going to add a policy, convert JSON to XML. Now, I don't want to completely change this API to become an XML API. So I can say I'm going to apply it only when the content type is set to JSON. And I'm going to actually take into account the accept header. So if I go back to the developer portal now and go to this particular API, let's use the simple list places. If I call it with no additional headers, I should just get the data in JSON. If I provide, let me scroll back to the header section. If I provide this header, I should be able to get it, there it is, in XML as well. So without really having to change anything on my backend, I get this for free and I get to support legacy clients. Now, in products, I mentioned that one of the key things is being able to limit access to the products. Now, I showed you how you can add individual APIs to a product and limit access by simply delineating which product has access to what. But an interesting scenario is also limiting the number of calls, setting a quota, or setting a rate limit. So what I'm going to do here, while I'm still in policies, I'm quickly going to set a policy on the Taurus product to limit the number of calls that can be made in a given period of time. Now, this belongs in the inbound section because, of course, if the quota is exhausted, it should deny the request. There's no point in going further. And we have both the usage quota and rate limit policy. Rate limit is easier to demo in the time constraints here, so I'm going to do this. And again, I just have to replace the values from the template. I'm going to say enable 5 calls every 60 seconds, so 5 calls per minute. I can limit it further by any particular API operation, but I do not need to do this. And now if I go back to, I think this is for the Torus product. So if I go back to one of these APIs that are accessible via the Torus product, ensure I'm calling them through this product, there's actually no other access. So if I, it looks like this is the one that I botched earlier. So I'm going to use this one. So if I make enough calls, at some point I shouldn't be able to get 200 OK anymore. Yeah, there it is. So now I started getting 429 too many requests, and if I scroll down, I can actually see when the rate limit replenishes again. So it's very useful for a user to understand where they stand in their usage. And so with all this usage, it begs the question of how can we learn what our users are actually doing? We have an analytics section for this. So at a glance, when I enter the analytics, I can see a number of things. All of these reports here are really an overview version of what we have in the individual pages here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the pages so we can get the detailed version. So under usage, I can see the calls made through to this API in a particular time period in the bandwidth. I can select the time period above, and I can also further query by a particular product. So I can say I only want to see the Torus product or API operation. And I can also see where the calls are coming from. So I think in this case, we're having some proxying via the United States, which is why we're seeing that as the main source of calls. Under health of an API, I can see what responses I'm getting. So when we get 400 and above, these will show us failed. And it's basically a sort of rough measure of, is my API performing well? If I'm getting a lot of these failures, and this, by the way, includes both failures coming from the backend and from the proxy, it means that I have to investigate and I have to go look further into what is going wrong. I also get to see the performance of my cache, so basically the ratio of hits versus misses. How well is the cache actually able to improve the performance of my API? And I can see the response time. Now, speaking of response time, in general, the additional latency from the proxy itself with no policies is less than 1 millisecond. When you start configuring more policies, of course, latency goes up. And of course, there's also network latency, which is a separate matter altogether. But you should still expect on the order of the low double digits for latency addition from the proxy. Right, and I think this concludes the demo section. So, what I should mention for all of this is that it is a dedicated service. So, when you provision one, this is one of the reasons why it takes 10 to 15 minutes, is you get your own dedicated VMs, storage accounts, and all the resources that come into an API management service. It's not a multi-tenant environment, and it's really meant for high-volume production environments in this way. And in general, what we have found in tests that we can deliver with an instance is about 1,000 requests per second, and it can burst to almost 3 times that, and the latency, as I mentioned, in the low double digits. Now, the pricing, actually looks like there's a slight change. One question we often get asked is, what is our roadmap? So at present, we operate in a very agile manner. We don't actually have a roadmap. We try to respond to requests as they come in. So this is a great thing in many ways, as we can not have to respond, but we'll ship this in 6 months or in 1 year. If something's high priority, we can ship it in a month. And for this purpose, we also have a changelog where we publish all of the changes exactly as we ship them. So if you go in there, you will see that we have releases sometimes on every week cadence. Now, I must say, I think the one slide has disappeared here. So our pricing model is basically two things. It's basically, we have two editions. We have a developer edition, which is $49 a month. And it contains all the features of the pro version. So if you're going to test the product, you don't have to use the standard, more expensive version, because you get all the features from the developer version as well. And we have the standard version, which is for production instances, which is $6.99 a month. And you can learn more about how many calls and what the limits of these tiers are on the website. So now, in closing, I must mention that we saw how the product can be used to take an existing or multiple backends and create a facade that is uniform, have a very similar URL structure, have the same authentication method on the front, and also how it's possible to allow users to access their own data via doing an OAuth handshake to a third party. We saw how quickly it is to configure the APIs and to package them in a product that in some cases may provide a limit. And we also saw the effect of the interactive documentation, how quickly it allows a developer to make a call without writing any code. I mean, really, if you go there and sign up and go to the console, you will be able to make a call in less than 5 minutes for sure. And I think that's very important, that metric called TTFC, time to first call. And one of the goals that we have for the developer portal is to minimize this time as much as possible. And lastly, we saw the analytics platform, which allows you to understand how your API is being used. So there are a couple of related sessions, really similar to what I showed, perhaps one note. They're not really API management, so I'm simply providing them here for information. If you want to find me, I will be available at the MSE booth. And in fact, these times are just for me, but my colleague Manu, who's sitting now at the front, will be available probably most of the other time. So you can talk to us if you want to, and you can share your scenarios. We'd be very interested to hear that. We have some DevTrack resources. The standard Gen 09 Learning Developer Network content. And as I open up the Q&A, I would like to ask you to please fill out an evaluation form and provide feedback so we can make this presentation better. So I think that's the end of it, and I'll be happy to take questions now. Yeah, so the question is, how would I say that API management aligns with mobile services? Well, mobile services is really for when you want to build an API. So in this case, for example, I built my backend. With API management, you can't really create a new API. We assume that you have backends that you take. And also, it is well tailored towards enterprise scenarios. But really, the fundamental difference is that you can't actually build the API with API management, and we also provide things like transformation. So we make it very. So we start with the assumption of, okay, you take your existing backends. They can be mobile services. They can be something else, and we provide you with the tools necessary to unify them. So it's a slightly different perspective, if that makes sense. Yep. Integrated with Wizzle. So I don't know if we have any plans at this point. I can't.
I'm asking because we have to run our legacy system and thousands of customers. If I would choose today, I wouldn't build up a Wizzle service, but anyways, what about honoring legacy systems?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take this feedback. What about honoring Wizzle? Okay. Yep. Other questions? Yep. Sorry, can you repeat it?
Do
So, yes, so right now, if you wanted to do versioning of API, you would have to do this manually. So you can create multiple APIs, or you can use different suffixes to do this. And depending on demand, we could implement a different solution to this. At present, this is it. We are actually discussing this issue and thinking of different ways to do it. But at present, that's how you'll do it. Yep. So currently the system, so the question is it on-premise or cloud? The system is in the cloud. It can connect to any endpoint that you can expose to the web. So if your endpoint is on-premise, you can use different methods to expose it to the cloud, and then you can connect to it. As a potential way to make it easier, we are considering integration with hybrid services. But at this point, it is not planned. With hybrid connections, I'm sorry, Azure hybrid connections. I'm sorry again? What exactly would this, so the question is, can he include custom security? What exactly would this custom security entail? Can you give me an example? Well, so the general model, I hope I understand the question correctly, but so the general model is that developers go to the developer portal, they create an account, they subscribe to a product which provides them with keys that then they use to call the endpoint exposed through Azure API Management, and then that in turn connects to your backend. It connects to your backend via whatever authentication your backend requires, and this authentication is not exposed in any way to the developer who's accessing the system from the outside. So if your backend has some kind of authentication method or any kind of security, that should be hidden. And that's part of the process, really, because if you have multiple backends with different authentication methods, you do not want to complicate this for the user. Does this answer the question? Okay, great. Yes. So we support BASIC. We can obviously provide keys, as you saw. We support mutual certificates, and you know, auth is a sort of parallel to that as well at present. Are there any other kind of authentication methods that that you would like us to add? SAML. Okay. Cool. Thanks. Yeah, in the back, I guess on the left first. How we can bind an API to the backend?
Yes, we consume the API call data from a backend system. We have not seen where you compare our configuration of this service.
Yes, well, let me switch back to this. Now, I think so I demoed this in the very beginning. I'm not sure that you were able to see it, but if I open up any of these APIs, if I go to the settings, I have a place where I provide the URL of the backend. Is that the question, or?
No, I don't see the configuration from where the data calls.
Where?
I can configure the API consume a backend system.
Mm-hmm.
My own backend system.
Yes. But what do you mean by configuring your backend system?
Yes, when you call this slash tour, mm-hmm. it becomes now a data five request points. From where from this data? Where are stored these five connections? Is this in the file?
Yeah.
From where comes the data?
Actually, maybe, Manu, did you understand the question? I don't know why I'm getting lost. Well, I can quickly go over sort of the process, and maybe this will answer your question.
Maybe it's too similar to the
It's actually what did. Oh, I see. Yes. So, I mean, this is the URL of the backend, while this is the URL of basically the endpoint exposed for Azure API Management. Yeah. Okay. So they're very similar. I'm sorry for for providing confusing APIs. And the lady on the right. Sorry to make you wait. It's hard for me to hear you. So yes, good question. So the question is, can you configure the system by using UI rather than by using configuration rather than by going through the UI? Correct? Yeah. So at present, what we can do is we can do a blanket backup and restore of the system. We don't quite have a format which allows you to do this. But I think this is valid feedback, so I'll take it down in my list here. In fact, let me switch back to this. Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Automated deployment of the configuration of the entire system, we have a REST API, and that allows you to perform most of these operations. So I guess in the middle ground, sorry, I should have actually answered this way. In the middle ground is that you can use the REST API to write a script that does this automatically. Now, we don't have a text format where you can, for example, write some JSON that configures the entire system. Sorry, can you say it again? In Azure Pack, I don't think we're available in Azure Pack at the moment. So,
not
available. Is this a request? Would you like to access it from Azure Pack? Yeah, sure. All right. Did somebody here have a question? Yeah.
In the analytics section, are you able to create alerts if your backend system is running slow or generates
noise? Not for this kind of event at the moment. Now, we do have alerts. That is, we do have notifications, but they're for events like registrations to products and so forth. So not at the moment. I guess I can write this down as well. A nice to have or a must have? A nice to have.
It's always a must have.
Everything. And deliver tomorrow. Cool. Other questions?
Is there a way to intercept when the developer will subscribe to your API? For example, if I have a large backend that I do not want to expose to the public to, for example, sell some information, so I can build in a payment feature or something?
Yeah, so there are two ways to do this. Let me switch back to the demo machine. There are two ways to do it. One is you can, and I think I quickly went over this, you can require approval to product subscription. So in fact, let me show you something. Let me go back to the developer portal. Now, I am subscribed. If I go into my profile as an administrator, Well, wait for this. I can go here. So when I create a product, basically, I'm able to require subscription approval, which means that when somebody tries to subscribe to the product, the administrator will get an email saying, XYZ user wants to subscribe. Would you like to approve access? And you can approve and reject. And the way it works, if I actually went and unsubscribed from one of these products right now, So if I go into products, I think I only left tourist. Connection is very spotty here. So here I have the subscribe option. Now, it doesn't require approval right now, so if I click subscribe, it'll just subscribe me. But if I go back and require approval, yes, so I'll get an email. Mind you, I'm not going to go and open up the email. The other way to limit access is to change the visibility settings. So right now, this particular product and the subsequent APIs that are part of it are visible to administrators only. So if I create an incognito tab, for example, here and try to open up developer portal there, I will be considered, where'd it go? I will be considered a guest. So I mentioned this before. I'm just quickly going to go over it again in case you missed it. So we have three built-in groups for visibility. We have the administrator, which is the administrator of the system. We have developers, everybody with an account effectively, and guests, anybody who's visiting the developer portal. So right now, if I click into APIs, I will see nothing because neither of these two products that I created have guests added as an invisibility. If I add it for the Explorer product, for example, and save it, I will now be able to see this API. So by using groups, you're able to limit just the, they won't even get the ability to register for the product. If that answers the question. Yeah, so you have to. So
I would like to be that. I would like to automate the process so when they pay, they have access.
I see. Okay, so the question is this is a good example actually. If you wanted to charge for the APIs and you wanted to obviously verify that they have paid, how do you enable product subscription only in this case? So we have a separate feature for this called delegation. And what it allows you to do is to have a handoff. When users try to subscribe to a product, before that subscription actually goes into effect, it hands off to a third-party place, to the website that you create, basically, where you can complete the process. So you can charge them. If you're successful in doing so, you can use the REST API and create that subscription and then hand back off to the developer portal. And you can do this also for sign-in and sign-up. For sign-in and sign-up, it's useful if you wanted to use the same accounts that you already have on your system. So if you didn't want them to create a new username and password, even if they used some kind of social login like Facebook or Google or Twitter, you may just want to avoid it completely and log them in with your current accounts. I don't know which hand came up first. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, if you want to have a charge-as-you-go model, how would you go about that? The way I understand it, if I understand it correctly, is that let's just say you bill something like, say, $10 per 10,000 API calls. And as the user keeps on using more of these calls, there's no actual limit per month, it's just that they get charged. I think in this case, your best bet is to use the REST API and retrieve this information and just poll effectively. That makes sense. Cool, that was quick. So the question is it possible to customize the policies? Not at present. It is something that we are considering. So in this case, I'm wondering in what language would you like to write custom policies? Okay. I see. Okay, makes sense. And what development platforms would you like to use?
.NET, for instance.
.NET.
But we don't have, we have
Okay. Cool. Cool. Other questions? Yep. I think right now they go 3 months menu, is that correct? Or up to a year? Up to a year, yeah, I think that's how long we keep them. Well, I can go back there certainly. So by explore them, did you mean get the raw logs and be able to do further crunching? So you can get some of the report data through the REST API. We don't expose the actual raw logs at the moment. So maybe to some extent you can achieve, it depends on your scenario, I think. Yep. Failed request, the individual request. I mean, you can certainly see aggregate data. At present, you can't see the actual individual failed requests. We don't provide tracing. One thing that we provide is when you make a call through the developer portal, if there is a failure, in fact, in all cases, we provide a trace. So if I go back here, let me just make a simple call. Now, it's not quite, I think, what you want, but it's still worth showing. This took 6 seconds last time. So we do provide this trace, which only the administrator can see. And they can see exactly which policies got activated and what happened. So it's useful when you debug your own API. It is not what you need if you wanted to see why users are getting failures. So it's part of the problem. Other questions? Yeah? Not at the moment, from what I know. So what you can do, I mean, the simple rewrite that I set up. I think I set it up on Tor, if I remember. Place by name. It's just very simple. I simply rewrote it, and I have the variables in brackets. So. Well, I mean, it may be related in some ways, I guess. But it is separate. It's not MVC routing. Yeah. Okay. Can
they integrate this with a short distro?
1 second. Let me add this. And can you integrate it with BizDoc? Is the question. It will be up to you to do this. I mean, we don't stop you in any way, but we don't provide any deeper integration. So this is the product in the cloud. You can run BizDoc in the cloud, BizDoc services. So, other questions? Cool. Well, I mean, if there are no other questions, you can always just find me, as I mentioned, at the Microsoft booth and Manu as well. Ask us further questions. I'll be very happy to learn more about your scenarios and particularly what you think the product really needs to add to improve. So thank you for attending.